Well, in the first half, I'm going to let you know why psychics don't work. I have definitive proof. Also, a crazy story about a guy punching someone on an airplane. Irish mobster turned author Richie Stevens is going to join us as well with this remarkable story. We'll do that right after this.
Saving money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning architectural shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
All right, let me tell you about Investall, democratizing investing with a completely automated trading app. Access strategies, hedge funds, well, the ones they use. So do it like the big boys. Opt for a robo-trader that selects an expert strategy for you, or pick up four stocks or cryptocurrencies and set them on autopilot. Investall uses AI and forecasting to automatically rebalance your portfolio based on the current market conditions. You're using Investall, right, Chris?
Yeah, and you're talking about forecasting. They have this price trend forecaster that checks any stock's current and prior momentum so you know when it's time to invest or sell out of position. It's awesome.
Securely link your mortgage, credit cards, and investment accounts, including digital wallets for NFTs, to get a full picture of your financial health. Am I right, Dawson?
Download Investall on any device, including your smartphone, tablet, laptop, or desktop now. Use promo code ADAM to receive $20 free when you deposit the minimum of $100 to start investing. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, David Koechner, and the co-author of The Gangster's Guide to Sobriety, My Life in 12 Steps, actor Richie Stevens. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, and now, wishing our Jewish listeners a Happy New Year, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. The choice we're going to mandate to get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. I love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right, Lashana Tova.
And Bald Brian.
Yeah, I kill motherfuckers and this and that.
I was woke up a little bit early this morning, turned on the TV, was on the local news, and it's really part of why I can't do anything is because if I see something, there's almost nothing that is presented to me where I don't stop and go, what's this? And then I got to stop, and then I have to figure it out. It was just on the news, local news, and they were telling a story about a local man who punched a flight attendant in the back of the head.
Rabbit punch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bolo. Rabbit and bolo. Right in the back of the head. I filmed it off my TV set, so the quality may vary a little bit. But I just looked at the story, and I thought, all right, crazy guy punching someone on an airplane. What else is new? But then something struck me. And we'll watch him strike the flight attendant in the back of the head.
A man from Orange County was caught on video punching a flight attendant on a plane to LAX.
Big sock in the back of the head.
The attack happened last Wednesday on a flight from Cabo San Lucas to Los Angeles. Alexander Tung Lee from Westminster is facing a federal charge of interfering with members of a flight crew. If convicted, he faces a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison.
That footage didn't match the story, right? Because he punched some dude in sleeveless cutoffs.
Hmm?
Did he not just punch some guy in did I miss that? Was he wearing a vest?
I think that was a sweater vest.
Oh, I thought it was like sleeveless cutoffs and they fucked up the clip.
But they didn't even say like assault battery. They just said interfering with a flight attendant.
I was not going any of these directions. The direction I was going, it's a guy in a kind of Hawaiian shirt punching a guy in the back of the head.
Drunk.
Then they cut to him in court with the court.
Wait a second.
Yeah. Well, that when he's in court.
Yeah. Oh, he has his lucky Hawaiian shirt on still.
It worked for me once.
No, look, I'm not Mark Garagos.
Oh, good.
But I've
eye.
Talked to Mark many times about putting a guy in a nice V-neck. pastel sweater.
Yeah.
Easily obtainable this year.
Yeah.
Old Navy, probably down the
Costco
street from the courthouse. Yeah. He shows up in what I'm assuming is the same Hawaiian shirt that he assaulted the flight attendant in, and they're going to look at the footage of this guy beating the guy. Now, maybe there's a method to his madness. Like, look at the guy. He's wearing a Hawaiian shirt. Like,
all colors.
How bad could he be? But
wow. We're so, like, not paying attention, the rest of us, that I'm like, yeah, that's him. That's him in the shirt. But no, that's his court drawing. That's when he's on the stand, he's in the shirt.
I am so fascinated. I feel the same way about, you know, the guys who show up to the funeral in a maroon members only jacket, right, or something. Like, is there nothing in your closet? Is there not? You do not possess one black button up shirt, like a sweater. It doesn't.
Solid color.
I get it. It's unseasonably hot, but they do have air conditioning in the courthouse. And you got your Hawaiian shirt on. Now, I was just sitting there staring at it, and I was like, you know, the color palette is pretty close. But on the other hand, what are the duties of the courtroom sketch artist? Does he have to color in the entire shirt? Or
yeah, if he's real busy, how much you want him working on that?
Is it the exact same shirt he was wearing when he assaulted the flight attendant? Or does he have a closet full of these?
Is he like Steve Jobs? It's just a closet full of the same shirt.
I don't want to spend too much time thinking of what to wear.
Right.
Yeah, whether it's a Southwest flight and I'm assaulting someone or I'm going to court for assaulting someone, I don't want to spend hours working on my ensemble.
Good eye.
But I was like, this motherfucker wore the same Hawaiian shirt. And, and by the way, I'm guessing when we get in front of the court, we're going to look at the footage of you in your Hawaiian shirt.
That's him.
It's going to be hard to go, that wasn't me.
No.
Really? You have the same tailor.
That's amazing.
Whose Bruno Mollies are these?
This is a good time to remind people of your idea, sweaters from Earners, for the funerals.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Please. I probably have 15 items in my closet that would be semi-appropriate to wear to a funeral other than the Hawaiian Punch guy.
Right.
Which now, by the way, you're going to be called the Hawaiian Punch guy.
That's good.
Because of your love of Hawaiian shirts.
And punching.
I'm also curious about who's representing them. You know what I mean? Like, I'd have
someone court-appointed.
I'd have everything from, you know that that tattoo on your forearm that says LAPD, need to take a hike to hell? I wear a long sleeve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I think our judge may have a son who may be he may be wearing the blue. As a matter of fact, if I'm representing you, I shall go into my own. What are you, medium?
Yeah, I'll grab you something from the closet.
Yeah, I'll grab
you
something.
$90 well spent.
Yes, I will just pull something out, and you can just go ahead and pop it on in the parking structure. And maybe not your style, but maybe the judge has a different aesthetic that he's looking for. So, he wore the Hawaiian shirt.
Damn.
Now, the Hawaiian shirt on the plane makes sense. Obviously, he was in vacation mode when he was punching the guy in the back of the head. But
now we're back to the sober daylight.
Now we're in the courthouse, and it's Monday. So we're going to need you to clean it up just a little bit.
Ask Mark, is there a possibility this was like the morning after, like he was in the pokey and overnight and then it rained?
I don't know. I don't know.
You should be in a jumpsuit.
I don't know how I don't know how the court appointed guys work on that, but, you could still, if you're representing this chap, you can still head over to the prison and get him some fresh clothes. Like
possible.
That's what Mark says he does it all the time. All right. This is why I cannot progress in my life, because all I wanted to do was turn the TV on and then switch a channel, but I was transfixed by the Hawaiian Punch. Another thing, I don't know if you guys had these jokes when you were familia jokes where your family had jokes that weren't really funny, but they liked them.
Indeed.
And for me, It was in very sharp relief for me, because I considered myself funny, but no one in my family considered me funny. So I would say funny things and they'd all just kind of look at me. And then once in a while, they'd trot out one of their isms and it would bust them up. And then I was like, how come no smiles when I'm laying down the world class comedy here at age 12? I had this thought. I don't know how it got into my head. I don't think I've ever shared it and I know I've shared every story 100 times, but my grandparents would go out to dinner with like the Mandels, and they would go to some Indonesian place. The guy's shirt got me going. And they would get a dish called Bami Goreng. Now, I had never heard of it until, but I had, because Bami Goreng sounds fucking fantastic. It's the noodles and beef or pork
like
or whatever.
Like a chow mein style.
Yeah, kind of chow mein-y. And then my grandmother would come home, and she would announce that we're out to dinner with the Mandels. And just for clarification, they were the Gorogs, Laszlo and Helen Gorog. She would then return and say that she would go out with the Mandels, and they would always order the Bami Goreng. And they liked it so much that Trudy Mandel announced they should call it the Bami Gorog. And then she would laugh hysterically. And then repeat it the next time, every time they went out and got the Bami Goreng.
Oh,
right,
boy.
In perpetuity. And I would just kind of go, not funny, not that interesting.
Mildly amusing.
At best.
I'm doing social observations here, and no one's ever told me to write a one of them down, but I got to hear the Bami Gorog story.
You're like
once
fucking
again.
Nixon, man.
Yeah, man. I'm doing like Mort Salsette at that dinner table, and I'm hearing about the Bami Gorog.
Oh.
But it did make me want Bami Goreng.
That looks delicious. Take it down. At the very least, I'd say you have higher self-esteem, because when I was in those situations, my first thought would be, I don't think that's funny. There must be something wrong with me. My sense of humor must be wrong. But at least you knew.
I was pretty objective. I was like, I think what I'm saying is funny, but I was influenced by their lack of laughter to a negative degree.
It's not even a pun. What is it?
Bami Gorog?
Yeah, it's not even a pun.
It's a play on words to an extent.
Yeah.
Yes. It's a
joke for four people?
Yes. Yes. I mean, because nobody...
Yeah, no other restaurant.
I can't work it into my set because people don't know who the Goroks are and they don't know what Bami Gori is.
It'd
so.
Take a lot of setup.
That'd be a funny alt-comic routine, be like, do those jokes, but then spend the next 5 minutes. Now, the background of that joke
that's
is...
That's right. Here's why you should have laughed. Then there is this for you, Gina.
Uh-huh.
Popped in my head when I was talking on Take a Knee to Detective Paul Holes, who blew the lid off the Golden State Killer and many other cold cases as well. At the very end of the interview, with 3 minutes left or so, it popped into my head. I was talking about all the official particulars, about all the gruesome details, about all the stories. And at a certain point, I thought, psychics. Mm. How does that play into any of this? Mm. Because sometimes when you argue with a kooky broad about the validity of psychics, they go, well, I think if detectives, units, police force would use them around the country routinely, there's something there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I go, you know, it's like it is one of those arguments where you go, yeah, why would the Fresno PD use a psychic if there's just nothing there?
Yeah.
So I did. I posed the question to him. I said, how does this factor in? Does it work? Has it ever worked?
What did he say?
Well, we're about to hear it. Last question, because it just popped into my head. I think about, you hear about law enforcement using psychics for things. And then I always go, oh, get out of here. And then somebody will go, no, they did use a psychic in X, Y, or Z case. And then I kind of go, oh, get out. And then they go, yeah, but then why would they talk to a psychic? In your vast experience, has that ever been a factor? Is it a wives' tale? Like, I mean, because they will go. They have spoken to psychics, so maybe they have. But is there any history or anything in your vast experience that's ever involved a psychic and solving a murder?
Well, psychics were used much more frequently back in the 70s when I was, you know, those are the era of the cases that I was focusing in on. So I have been involved in many, many cases in which psychics have weighed in. And in not one of those cases has the psychic provided any information that has led solving the case, let alone, you know, just trying to find, you know, more physical evidence or anything like that. you know, across the nation, could there have been occasion which the psychic threw a dart, you know, and mm-hmm. it just happened to land on the right detail? Possibly. You know, until I really see somebody who can consistently provide details using the psychic ability that are accurate, I am probably the ultimate skeptic when it comes to psychics. You know, it's just, I don't see investigators today reaching out to psychics. What I see is psychics reaching out to law enforcement because they think they have something that they can provide to the investigators. But I've yet to be personally aware of a case in which whatever the psychic said actually led to solving the case.
Boo. All right, so have that one chambered, sane man, next time you're at a cocktail party with Susan Pinsky and she trots out the detective psychic.
You know why that theorem. Makes me, that disappoints me? Because I'm consistent. I want to believe. I don't, but I desperately want to. So I want someone to sway me, and that's not swaying.
No, I think he was pretty definitive.
Yeah. And so when people say, you know, I've worked with the, you know, LAPD or whatever, maybe that just means they reached out. They wanted to see if they could get in on a little something, something.
I think it's like you take your clothes off and streak across the field during the Super Bowl. And then you go, I was a part of the Super Bowl 53.
Right. I was on the field.
I was on the New England side. Like, technically. Yeah, but you're being tackled.
And the camera's like, cut away.
You didn't run across yeah. the field.
Security was chasing
you were there.
You were technically yeah. on the field yeah. for the game.
Yes.
All right.
Sorry, Gina.
That's okay.
Now listen, I went in to it with hopes held
you
high as well.
You absolutely
I just
did.
I wanted to know why so many psychics. It's a part of my childhood. They're working with psychics.
That's
and
what he
said. That's what they used to do, but it
DNA
never
replaced psychic calls.
Yes. I would say. Yes, gypsy ladies having feelings versus DNA
right.
analysis. I'm going to go with the DNA every time. I had a, let's see, I've got some stuff to talk about here. I noticed this. I don't know if you guys noticed this with your dog. I brought it up before, but I noticed that when I let Phil out in the morning and he takes a dump, wherever I am, he positions his ass mm-hmm. toward me.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It's essentially what you do if you wanted someone to examine your stool and you're a dog. I mean, sometimes I'm out in the patio and he'll turn and he'll line it yeah. up and he'll check the compass and the angle. He'll yeah. get out a sextant,
sure.
find the North Star, and then do it. But there are other times where I'm standing in the kitchen just looking through the window and he then positions another 60 degrees mm-hmm. to the southwest and then takes – he's always facing his dump. His face – I look at his tail and yeah. his ass and the dump.
It's firing at you.
It's firing at me. But he does not take the same process when it comes to taking a leak. Taking a leak, he goes perpendicular. He just
oh, really?
Comes across. Mm. He doesn't seem to have a direction for the leak. The leak is just, I'm outside, I'm taking a leak. He doesn't lift his leg. He'll just come across. But when it comes to the Duke, he will position himself.
Have you guys heard the wives' tale that, or the adage or whatever, that the dog always faces north when they're doing their business?
Mm.
Easily disproven.
Well, the other one that I was thinking of, because we've been puppy sitting for 3 weeks, and I read this somewhere, and I never stopped thinking about it, like the dolphins raping people, dogs poop in alignment with the Earth's magnetic field. But that could also be,
again, easily disproven.
Dog shit.
Yeah, just watch your dog poop for a few days.
But you're saying it's personal.
I think it is.
Oh, it's an attack, I see.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter where he is, he'll find it. And
the poop is phasing out.
Right. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Is that his way of trying to make it easier for the help, you, to clean it up? Like, here you go, here it is.
Oh, I think he's being courteous.
I think yeah. he's being passive-aggressive.
That, yeah. Well, we've met Phil.
I think this is...
He's not aggressive, here's so what must I be passive-aggressive.
I read somewhere that dogs poop in a certain direction because that's when they're at their most vulnerable. And if they trust you to watch their back,
oh.
that's why they do it.
No. That's like Charlie that's sleeps the best when my arm's like he's next to me on the couch or the bed or whatever. My arm's like over his genitals. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like that's like the dog's yes. instinct.
Yeah.
Not my hand, okay. my arm.
Champ will always look at me. He'll look me dead in the eye.
I love that little scamp.
Yeah. He'll go perpendicular to me. Mm-hmm. But so, like, I see his side of his body.
His head.
Maybe but he will look.
But maybe it's the novelty of a guy smoking and eating tacos that's captured his imagination.
He
looking
can't
good, looking good, Dad. Check out what I'm doing.
I'd like one of those things. So Bill does that. Yeah, maybe it's because he thinks I have his back.
Yeah, he's got his six. You got a six.
I got a six. Yeah. Maybe the flying knee will cure that. I mean, not in the first time, but eventually he'll get the message.
Interesting.
And then he'll want to keep his eyes.
That's right.
On his 12th.
If this
which will
is
be
true,
me.
Then something tells me he repositions himself when Olga's around. Because he will get a swift kick in the ribs.
I should talk to Olga about what direction Phil's anus is. Also, on that note, out in front, they have these little signs posted in the lawns of the houses around the studio that little cardboard signs that say, please be respectful, and it's got the dog.
Oh, those are all over Balboa.
Making the duty on the lawn. I get that people need a heads up, but isn't that just sort of woven into the social fabric? Like, just don't let your dog shit on other people's lawns.
Apparently not.
On the landscaping, which we're looking at, I understand that poops is going to sit there and get gross or whatever. On the plants, that's feeding the plants, right? Mm. Isn't that kind of mulch? Mm.
That's a lazy person's excuse.
I'm not that person, but I'm saying.
But the problem is the dogs
get
don't offense, really.
You cheap ass.
They don't really shit in the shrub. They just find a little opening. But either way, but fucking bag it. What I was looking at with these pictures, which I see all over the place, is. It says, please be respectful, thank you, and it's got the dog squatting with the universal slash to it. I don't know that I need the miniature dog shit.
The pile of poop.
I don't need the pile of
poop. I know what he's doing.
I like it. I like the way it brings it home.
Now, I feel like it's forcing me to think about animated poop.
It is. It's supposed to.
We all know what's going on here. There's no need for that.
Yeah, I'm with Brian. I don't think I have delicate sensibilities.
Please
I'm
don't
just,
let your dog sit on my lawn. No.
And by the way, you save the ink on the dog shit, and every 23rd sign, you get a free sign worth of ink. You know what I mean?
That's
true. It's a savings.
Yeah.
And it could also be passed along to the consumer because then the price would go down
of the sign significantly. It's a good point.
Yeah. Anyway. I've passed this sign a million times, and I thought, I don't need fake poo.
I've been going to the dog park every morning. I get woken up at 5:55 a.m. Mm. Didn't know there were two 5:55s in a day. Mm. And I go to the dog. I'm a dog park person now. And, oh, my God. If you're not coached up, the people will come after your ass. And I say, good. You watch your dog. And if the dog poops, you hightail it over.
That's the social protocol?
Absolutely. I'm loving. I think the dogs are teaching the residents of the valley a lot when it comes to common courtesy.
Okay.
I'm really enjoying this experience.
Well, I'm glad.
What happens when you encounter like the dog? Does anyone bring their dog there who's a little antisocial or maybe
they fucking round them up and carry them out on a rail.
Oh, really?
Because they have the big dog park and then a sign that literally says for small and timid dogs only. But here's where these fuckers find the loophole. They have big, scary dogs that are afraid of big, scary dogs, but they like to bully the little dogs. And boy, we go after them. Oh. Is this your dog? Is this your dog? He tried to bite my...
Take care of this.
Yeah, this isn't the park that you're supposed to be in. Yeah, no, this is small.
Excuse you.
I'm like, I get dog people all of a sudden. Like, fuck that. This little furry guy is just trying to play. He doesn't want to be eaten.
Maybe...
You guys don't go to dog parks because you're rich and you have
yards.
Maybe
renters shouldn't be allowed to own pets because this is a recipe for disaster.
But this is how you socialize them. Right? This is how you socialize the residents in North Hollywood.
I wouldn't know, do you have a fence?
Then it's back to the shit box with no light.
It's been fun.
Well, speaking of that, I was, I've been sitting on this Bill Maher clip for a couple of weeks now, but I thought it was pretty interesting, and it's Bill Maher talking about presentism. Hmm. Which is
not familiar.
What is that?
It's a new thing where we decide it's kind of like everyone who was born before us was bad because they used these terms, or they owned a slave or slaves, or they acted in such a way toward women. It's a very interesting way to pass through life, which is we just go ahead and sit around now and go, yeah, I'm for gay marriage. And then you go, my grandfather wasn't. Oh, he's a bad guy. Yeah. It's like, no, that's just not the way that's not the way society works.
And I've never seen this. I hope I'm not stepping on the clip by saying that be careful throwing those stones, 2022. Because slippery slope in 30 years, all the shit that we're doing that we didn't realize.
It does take a lot of brain power to do the math on, you know, 20 years down the road.
And also, it does make you realize, like, when we were going nuts, tearing down statues, like, what is that going to – I mean, we're going to look crazed. No. It's not wrong-headed. You know what I mean? We're going to look like insane children who are throwing tantrums in parks and streets. Yeah. Like, that's how we're going to come across to future generations. Not going to be sort of wrong-headed or misplaced something. It's going to be, we're going to look insane. Crazed. All right, sorry. Crazed. Go ahead.
And finally, new rule, you can get creative with a novel, a TV show, or a movie, but history books, that's not supposed to be fan fiction. How we teach our kids history has become a big controversy these days, with liberals accusing conservatives of wanting to whitewash the past, and sometimes that's true. Sometimes they do. But plenty of liberals also want to abuse history to control the present. And last month, a scholar named James Sweet caught hell for calling them out for doing just that. He criticized a phenomenon known as presentism, which means judging everyone in the past by the standards of the present. It's the belief that people who lived 100 or 500 or 1,000 years ago really should have known better. Which is so stupid. It's like getting mad at yourself for not knowing what you know now when you were 10. Stupid me, spending all that time raising sea monkeys and playing with slot cards and jerking off to a Playboy in the barn. Who doesn't have moments from your past that make you cringe? Who hasn't said, I can't believe I said that? I can't believe I wore that? I can't believe I thought that? I can't believe I did that? You ate dirt. You wanted to be a Ghostbuster. You shoplifted gum. You tried to be a white breakdancer. You wanted to marry Scott Baio. I read Ayn Rand. I smoked. I was into numerology. Yes, because we hadn't then grown into the persons we would become. And humanity writ large is just the collective version of that. Did Columbus commit atrocities? Of course. But people back then were generally atrocious. Everybody who could afford one had a slave, including people of color. The way people talk about slavery these days, you'd think it was a uniquely American thing that we invented in 1619. But slavery throughout history has been the rule, not the exception. The Sumerians, the Egyptians, the Greeks, Romans, the Arabs, British, the early Americans, all the way up through R. Kelly. The Holy Bible is practically an owner's manual for slaveholders. The word slave comes from Slav, because so many Slavic people were enslaved. And they're as white as the Hallmark Channel. Who do you think gathered the slaves from the interior of Africa to sell to slave traders? Africans, who also kept their own slaves. We're a species prone to making others of our species our bitch. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Humans are not good people. And the capacity for cruelty is a human thing, not a white thing. That's the truth, even though it doesn't jibe with the current narrative. But in today's world, when truth conflicts with narrative, it's the truth that has to apologize. Being woke is like a magic moral time machine where you judge everybody against what you imagine you would have done in 1066, and you always win. Presentism. Yeah, this professor is right. It's just a way to congratulate yourself about being better than George Washington because you have a gay friend and he didn't.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Speaking the truth.
This is why I'm constantly wondering, beside the people in the live studio audience, who is supporting Bill Maher these days? Because I know a lot of people on the left being like, fuck that guy. So, and then a lot of people on the right are like, I don't know. So I like him. Who's like, who are we?
People
where, you
on
know
the
what I
right,
mean?
They're just like cherry picking. They go, I disagree with Bill Maher about a bunch of stuff, but I saw his monologue and he's right on. You know, he's right with that. Like it, there's a, there's less of probably, I know from like, guys like, I don't know, Dennis Prager, you know what I mean? There's nobody on the left who cherry picks things he says. Like, you know, I don't disagree with him on abortion stuff, but he's kind of right about this whole kid stuff and whatever the stuff. They won't parse it out. They'll just go, he's bad, because the difference is people on the right don't think Bill Maher is bad. They think he's right about this and wrong about that. Or maybe he's wrong about 10 things and right about this. And I think they kind of feel the same way about, I don't know, Anderson Cooper or Don Lemon. They don't go, that's a bad dude. They just go, he's wrong about X, Y, or Z.
Even though he's on the wrong network.
Yeah, but then if he'll say something, they'll go, oh, he's right about this. If you're the folks on the left paint the people on the right as bigoted and homophobic and,
good,
you know, whatever, this is, you're a bad person.
Right.
So you wouldn't, you know, you don't go, well, Hitler made a point, you know, like you just go bad as a bad person.
Yeah.
And then so the problem is once you get into the ad hominem stuff, then you can't agree with anything because you can't agree with anything coming from a bad, bigoted person,
right.
You know, and I think the right looks at Bill Maher's kind of Hollywood pothead, but funny and smart and wrong-headed on things. And then, oh, but he's got this right.
Yeah.
That's
that
at least seems to be what I hear.
Footnote to the whole thing. I recently saw The Woman King. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this movie.
No, I haven't seen it, but I hear that.
94% with the critics, 99% with the people.
Damn.
There's a real crowd pleaser. People are really loving this movie.
Is it a crowd pleaser?
Yes. I don't think it's fantastic, but it's objectively a good movie. I can see how people would love it. It's got a lot of great action and practical effects too. Not like a lot of CGI. It's a lot of like actual fighting, choreographed, cool fighting. Footnote to that, a big plot line in the movie is how like the Viola Davis's tribe in the movie actually helps the European trade slave traders. You know what I mean? Get their prisoners of war become slaves.
Huh.
Wait. So.
Viola Davis is the titular woman.
She's
king.
The woman king.
She's the woman king. So is she helping the slave trade?
No, she's not the king. Like the actual guy who rules the tribe. They're prisoners of war. When they go to war and they capture 100 people, they then turn them over or have some sort of arrangement with European slave traders.
Oh, I thought they were fighting against the slave traders.
Interesting.
Nope. Interesting.
I mean, eventually that kind of becomes part of the story, but that's not the plot.
Yeah, because I heard historically that's what that tribe did.
It's a good movie. It's not, you know, fantastic, great, best picture stuff, but it's good.
Somebody tweeted me that it was like 94 and then like 99 amongst the people, and they think there's some thing going on with the people now, but I don't know what it is.
I would doubt. I mean, it's a popular theme, right? Like, you know, women doing it for themselves, about ass-kicking women, the whole poster.
Well, that works always with the critics, but oftentimes then drops for the people.
Yeah, it's got great action. It's a fun movie. It's a little long, but I can see 99 seems a little high, but not in the 90s seems perfectly justified for this movie.
Like we will look back in 10 years and be like, yeah, that was a 90 movie.
Yeah, especially with the people. Like I said, it's got great. It's almost entirely action throughout.
Right.
Really well choreographed action, not overwhelming CGI, kind of mind numbing. It's a good movie. I can see why it would be in the 90s with both. It seems justified to me.
I don't know if there's any way to game the people system.
Yeah, how would you even do that? Well, I guess you could create a bot.
Well, the way you motivate people to shit on something, can you motivate people to celebrate something?
I mean, if you were pissed off at a restaurant and you wanted to get your friends to do a bunch of bad reviews or something on it. I don't know. A subject for maybe tomorrow, but somebody tweeted me something. It was a long thing. I didn't really get into it, but it was interesting. We'll see if it holds any water or not. First, let me tell you about Simply Safe. Nothing matters more than the safety of you and your loved ones. But old school home security companies use outdated technology, overcharge you, and lock you into a multi-year contract. You don't want that. That's why I use Simply Safe. I trust Simply Safe. They've been on board for over a decade with us. You don't have to pull wires. You don't have to drill holes, peel and stick. The batteries last up to 10 years. Very ergonomically sound design. 24/7 professional monitoring. Simply Safe's agents dispatch police, first responders. They do it the moment a threat is detected, even if you're not home or cannot be reached. Customize the perfect system for your home in just a few minutes at simplysafe.com/Adam. Save 20% when you sign up for free interactive monitoring and get your first month free. Visit simplysafe.com/Adam to learn more. There's no safe like Simply Safe. All right. Actor and author and former gangster, Irish gangster, Richie Stevens is going to be in studio right after this. You own, you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Ace Man, Mike from Seattle. Got a rich man, poor man for you. Not having a 401k. Love the show.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
So Richie Stevens is in studio. We talked about the book, The Gangster's Guide to Sobriety, My Life in 12 Steps, put together by my friends Altshuler and Krinsky. The guys who kind of behind Silicon Valley and King of the Hill and all a whole bunch of interesting projects. I've worked with them on stuff, and they found Richie. How did you find them, Richie?
Yeah, I sent them a cold email. They didn't know me from Adam.
Based on what?
So I was helping out a friend, another actor buddy of mine, and he had written a comedy, and he wanted me to, like, see if I could get some producers attached. And, you know, they're, like, the top comedy guys at the time because they had Silicon Valley. So I just sent them an email and said, hey, we got a cool project. Would you like to work on it? And then that one didn't go anywhere. And then John said, I like you guys. Keep sending me stuff. So I sent him a couple of other ones, and then I sent him my book that I had been working on, and we partnered up and rewrote the book, and here we are.
I tell everyone it's not rocket science, show business. You gotta reach out, you gotta show up, you gotta send emails, you have to physically show up, you have to have meetings. Like, you do that, and these pipe dreams aren't really dreams. They're just you beginning a process. You started out in Ireland, right?
Yeah, born and raised in Ireland. I moved to America when I was 22 and got married really young. And I was a wild man when I was younger. And I had a bit of a problem with the old drugs and drinking. And, you know, one thing led to another. And I got sober in 2010. And I was a construction dude as well. I was like a drug dealer and I was in a gang, but I was a carpenter. And I broke my back in an accident in 2011. And then that was the end of my carpentry career. And then I became a model and then an actor. And Here I am.
What kind of carpentry did you do?
Oh, boy. Here we go.
I did framing and some finish work.
Oh, shit. Brian, you want to step outside with me?
Real carpenter.
Corolla's excited.
Ty Pennington style carpenter.
Well, I'm what you call an Aer Lingus carpenter. One of those guys that came over on the plane and learned it on the plane.
Now, before we go any further, I've got to apologize to everybody.
All right. I won't get into top plates and bottom plates and jack studs and headers and trimmers and things of that nature. I'll spare everyone that. But
you took the cliche carpentry to modeling route.
Yeah. Yes. It's a tale as old as time.
Yeah. I should have gone that direction. So life in a gang. You're about as white as you get, features-wise, color, tone. What kind of gang did you join up when you got to San Francisco?
Well, when I was back in Ireland, I was in Irish gangs. And then I ended up in an Asian gang, and I didn't even realize that was funny until I talked to John. And John was like, you're in an Asian gang? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, but you're not Asian. I was like, I know. He goes, well, how'd you end up in an Asian gang? And I was like, well, they had the best cocaine. I used to buy my coke off these guys. And at the time, I was getting my bulk supply off an Irish gangster, we'll call him the Pony. Uh-huh. So the Pony had crappy coke, and I used to get my good coke off these Asians. And then one day I had the brainwave. I was like, why don't I get my coke off you? And then they were like, you can only get it on one condition. And I'm like, what's that? And they said, well, once you start selling our coke, you're not allowed to buy it off anybody else. And I was like, why?
Brand loyal.
Yeah. Well, he said, because we have good stuff, and if you start selling crap under our name, then it'll ruin our reputation.
Smart, yes.
And he's like, but once you start buying it off us, you have to, you're not allowed to get it off anybody else. And if you rat on us, we'll kill your whole family.
Sure.
And I was like, okay, I've never ratted on anybody before, but, and I won't start now. And he's like, if you're ever arrested, keep your mouth shut and a lawyer will be provided for you. And then he said, but if anybody messes with you, we'll be up there with machine guns. So,
I like these guys.
Were these Chinese, Japanese, or just a general Asian gang?
I don't think I should be too specific about them because the lawyers maybe change all the names and everything, and these boys are still at large, so I don't want to be too specific about
these
fellas.
Let me take this for them. I'm pretty sure they were Laotian. How's that?
Well, the main dude, Ronald, he was American, but then we had another guy called Leroy, and he was like off the boat. Didn't wear shoes or socks when he was driving.
Wow.
Really? We just don't know which boat.
Wielded a katana blade?
Right.
I don't know.
Okay.
How was, what years was this with the cocaine?
So I got to America in 2005, and I was good for a couple of years. I was just a user, and then around recession time, 2007, 2008, I got back into the sales of it.
And the supply side.
Yeah, and I got sober in 2010, so, yeah.
What was a gram of coke going for back then?
So the crappy stuff was $50, but the good stuff was $60.
No.
Wow. Oh, seems like a good
investment. Like at Applebee's, the half salad is $13, right, but the full salad's $15.
Yeah, just a little bit more. Yeah, see, me and cocaine, I was like doing construction, making $8 or $9 an hour, and coke was 120 a gram or something. And it just wasn't financially feasible to make $8 an hour and do cocaine, but there were still guys that would do it. I mean, I always thought that was the saddest thing ever. Like, you would toil in the sun, I mean, up on a roof scraping shingles in this kind of weather for 8 hours, you'd get $90 and you'd buy a gram of cocaine and it'd be done within 5 minutes. I mean, like literally a day's, you know, 10-hour day doing construction could go up your nose in 45 minutes or an evening or whatever it was. I remember like thinking about that, about Anchor Steam beer as well. Like a six pack of Anchor Steam was like $13 or something. I was like, no way.
Are you kidding?
That's 2 hours of me digging for that six pack. Like, I would break everything down that way. It's a sad way to go through life.
When I was doing it, it was about 2 hours work at that time.
Oh. 2 hours work for
a gram? Not to.
Yeah. Well, the problem is when you get used to it, then it's like once you pop, you can't stop. That's the problem.
Was the the Coke, by the way, if anyone said shitty Coke and good Coke, there's a difference, man. Mm. I had a friend.
Gina, what is it?
I don't know. I wouldn't know.
I had a friend who worked in Miami.
Oh, boy.
One time he returned with the good version of it, and I was like, oh, this is what people are talking about. What do they do with the cheap Coke? Step on it?
Yeah, they step on it. Like, the good Coke is kind of, they call it fish scale. It's kind of shiny, and you got to break it off the rock, but the crappy stuff is kind of powdery. It's like sand and...
baby laxative-y.
Mm-hmm.
The $10 difference between the crappy stuff and the good stuff blows my mind. Mm. It's like, why would you, what reason is there to not?
Yeah, well, what I realized when I started selling the good Coke was that people will pay more for the good Coke. I used to get the stuff from the Pony, and it was like, it would be so hard to shift it, and then I got the good stuff, and then it was gone every week.
Who are the customers?
Yeah, people at the bar, other construction guys.
And are they usually buying a gram?
Yeah, it varies. I used to sell Viagra as well, so I'd sell Coke and Viagra.
Don't mix those up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's so much bootleg stuff out there now, right? Like the pharmaceutical world.
I used to buy them on the internet back then. I won't say what the website is because I'm not trying to encourage kids how to do it, but I used to just order them off the internet and they'd come in the mail and...
But back then, in the early days of Viagra, there was no generic. So are you actually getting like Viagra and selling it, or is it someone, some third party making their version?
I think it was a generic one. I don't think it was real deal. Oh. But it worked.
Yeah, it's got the same active ingredient, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I know there's a whiskey dick. Do you get a Coke dick?
Yeah, you do. That's why I was.
Oh, that's with the Viagra.
Yeah, that was the problem. Like, you know, some fellas, Chaser. They'd be looking to hook up with some dolls, and they'd have that problem. So then I would have the solution for the problem as well.
Oh, Dr. Feel Good.
Get them coming and going. Like the boss selling I Hate the Boss t-shirts.
That's right.
He sells the beer and the coaster.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up getting strung out yourself. You end up getting sober in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get sober?
Oh, well, it was like maybe my fifth suicide attempt. Oof. I was like a lunatic back then. And make a long story short, I had a hit out on somebody and I didn't kill him, thank God. But yeah, basically I was working with these other sober Irish guys and, you know, I knew they went to the 12-step meetings and they knew I had a problem. And this one guy, his name was Bernard, or Americans would say Bernard. So Bernard was this tough old Irish guy and he gave me his number one time and he says, if you ever want to get sober, give me a call. And for some reason, after that last suicide flirtation, I gave him a call and he started bringing me to the 12-step meetings and I just went all in with it. And then I had to like leave the gang and tell the boys I'm not going to be taking this Coke every week and I'm sober now. And
how'd they feel about that?
I was kind of worried because my main guy, Ronald, I told him over the phone and then he wanted to meet me. So I was kind of worried about that because he usually never wanted to meet me. And I had told them the story and, you know, I was afraid that they might kill me because I knew about the workings of their organization. And he told me to come meet him on a Saturday. And it was in, I think it was in the Richmond where I was living. And he got into my truck and I was like, oh, is this it? And I hopped in and I was all nervous and the radio was on. Oasis was on. Champagne Supernova. Yeah, yeah.
Salvation.
Yeah.
And
he got in and he was like, oh, I'm all about Oasis. And I was like, oh, okay. He's hardly going to shoot me in the back of the head if he's talking about Oasis at the same time. And then I reiterated what I said. You know, it's like, look, I have a problem with this. I can't be sober and keep on selling drugs because part of the deal of going to the meetings is you got to be good, you can't be breaking the law, you got to be honest, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, he just wanted to look me in the eye. And he said, you know, you're a good guy, you were always straight with us, and if you have a problem, you're doing the right thing. And I was like, okay, cool. And then he said, I want to buy your customers off you. And I was like, you can have them.
Yeah.
You
know? And, I don't really need them anymore.
Yeah. And he was like, no, you don't have to see anything. You don't have to touch anything. I'll give you residual income every week. You know, it's free money. And I was like, no, you can have them. I don't really want anything to do with it. And I was like, if any of the boys call me, I'll put them in touch with you. But I don't, thanks, but no thanks.
He wanted your Rolodex.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, a few of the guys who were really bad, like I had a problem, you know. But there was some of my customers who were even worse than me. Like when I was selling to them, I would be feeling bad and I'd be like, you better fucking cop your cell phone or I'm going to stop selling to you, you know. Like I would come to their place and they would be like really messed up. And then I was like, I should try and get these guys sober now, you know. And one of them, he was like, he was a gardener for the city of San Francisco. And he called me up looking for coke after I got sober. And I went over to the house, like, and he's like, where's the stuff? And I'm like, I don't do it anymore. There's these meetings you can go to, and then you don't have to get high anymore. You know, they show you how to do it, and yeah, we don't have to get high anymore. And he looks at me and he goes, I don't have a problem. And I was like, yeah, you do. And he goes, no, I could stop anytime I want.
Sure.
You go to your meeting. You know? Yeah, and I was like, fuck, I kind of realized I had a problem. I thought everybody else would realize it too when I told them, but it doesn't work like that.
You didn't say to anyone, I know where you can get some coke. Come with me to this church basement.
You say the guy was a gardener with the city of San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
I think if you said that with your Irish accent, and it would work for me saying, how gay is this guy? And then you'd go, he's gayer than the gardener of the city of San Francisco.
Let's
see if we can try this. You ready?
You want me to do a gay version of him?
No, do the Irish version. It'll sound. How gay was this guy?
He was actually straight.
Oh. You got to go there. You got to go to the ground. Ask me. I'll ask you. Gina, how gay was this guy?
He was gayer than the groundskeeper in San Francisco.
All right, gardener.
No, I tried.
It's not bad.
Sorry.
All right, role playing.
Okay.
Can I ask a delicate question? I mean this respectfully, were you bad at suicide or were these half-hearted attempts?
You know, I think there was someone looking out for me because every time I tried it, someone else would stop me. Like the first time I tried it, I was about 19 and I had... I had 100 ecstasy pills, and I was dating this girl. We broke up. I was really sad about it, and I drank like 2 bottles of Jack Daniels. And the more I drank, the more I thought, "Fuck it, I'll just kill myself." And I ended up taking 30 ecstasy. And that time I was going to go ahead with it, but the fella who was living with me, he saw what I was doing. I was like putting out cigarettes on my arms and all kinds of bad, like. And the guy I was living with, he hid the other 70 pills and he saved my life that time. And then...
Did you have to go to the hospital?
No. I was like all fucked up. I was like, you know, but I lived,
wow.
You know. And then other times it was like similar stuff. It would be just so weird that like somebody else stopped me. Another time I was going to shoot myself and I had my gun. I couldn't find my bullets. And I was looking because if you're a responsible gun owner, you're supposed to store the bullets separately from the gun.
Mm-hmm.
But I was awake for days. I was on loads of coke and drinking. And then I was like, fuck it, I'll just kill myself. And I was looking for my bullets. And the wifey came into the room and saw what I was doing. She took the gun, ran out of the house and saved my life. Like,
well, back to Brian's point, living in San Francisco with the Golden Gate Bridge right there. I mean, surely.
One time I was going to do the Golden Gate. Yeah, one time I actually... You know, I was a criminal, but I was a carpenter. And,
yeah.
You know what, Jesus.
Yeah,
I don't know if Jesus was a criminal, but...
I was doing a
side job at the weekend. You know, one of my buddies, he said, have a side job for you. It's at a fortune teller's up on Laguna Honda in San Francisco. I was like, what do they want? They want you to build like a dividing wall. I was like, okay. So I went to do it and I was on like a mad binge all week. So I was feeling like really low, all depressed and everything. And I came into this fortune teller's and I was building the wall, like I was like cutting my plates, measuring them, fucking nailing them down, put my studs in. And like, I'm thinking while I'm working, I think I'll go for the bridge after, you know, just fucking jump off the bridge. So I was thinking, nah, because up at the Golden Gate, there's a net in certain areas. So if you jump in the wrong spot, you land in the net.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. So I was thinking, fuck, knowing my luck, I'll only land in the net. And then I was like, you know what? I could just go there and shoot myself on the bridge. Nobody ever does that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So
needlessly elaborate.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm using my nail gun and, you know, cutting my 2x4s while I'm thinking of this. And the fortune teller, she was watching me while I was working. And she comes up to me and she goes, oh, my God. You have a wonderful aura. And I was planning my death, and it was so ridiculous. I just laughed out loud, and that kind of snapped me out of it for the day. Huh. It was so weird. Yeah, yeah.
So the book, which is now looking to become a TV story, series, movie. Yeah. I don't know what to call anything anymore. I just go, they'll make it into a movie, but then they'll make it into a series limited series. How's that going?
So far, so good. We have a few people interested, and John is in the driving seat with that. I leave it up to him. He's made a lot of TV shows, and I haven't made any. So,
any thoughts about playing yourself?
Yeah, I would like to. I don't mind. I'm flexible. I can play somebody else too. Doesn't matter. You see, a lot of the story happened when I was in my 20s.
You're aged out.
I'm aged out of that, maybe. But we'll see.
Maybe one of the Asian henchmen in the gang or something like that.
That might work. I actually had a whole head of hair, but I'm working on a show at the moment and they scalped me, so I should have hair back.
What are you working on where they shaved your head?
Mayor of Kingstown.
What is that?
Yeah, it's a show on Paramount Plus with Jeremy Renner.
Oh.
Mayor of Kingstown. Yeah.
Right.
Oh.
Mayor of Kingstown.
Yeah, oh, yeah, so, it.
Yeah, I'm nice. Back and forth to Pittsburgh for that at the moment.
What are you playing in that?
I'm not allowed to say anything about my character, but you can probably guess if you see what I look like.
Yeah.
I'm probably not going to be a charity
cancer survivor.
Worker. Yeah.
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 You look good with the shaved head.
Yeah.
You think? It works. Yeah.
It makes me look more thuggish.
Most folks can't pull that off.
A whole head of hair.
Oh, my God. It's young Tom Hardy.
That was last year I took that photo.
You look beautiful with the full head of hair, but the bald works as well.
Kind of edgy, sexy.
Soccer hooligan.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about the transition from all this into the glamorous world of modeling and shows and acting? I mean, how the hell?
Okay, so after I got sober, I wanted to just be a contractor because I had spent a good lot of years as a carpenter. And even though I was high a lot of the time, I learned a lot of shit. And I was good. Even though I was a cokehead, I always had work, you know. And that's what my plan was. I was just going to frame houses around San Francisco. And I was working on a job.
It's a good time to do it.
Yeah, I was working on a job in the Mission in 2011. We were doing a remodel. And it was an existing structure and we were putting in a big beam. And underneath, and the beam fell down and hit me and knocked me off the scaffold. And I
Glue
broke
lamb.
Yeah.
Paralam. What kind of big beam?
It was a big old paralam, but it was like, it was a heavy baby. It was like about the weight of a piano. Mm-hmm. And it fell, hit me on the shoulder, knocked me off the scaffold. And I broke one of my discs and herniated one. And I had a bunch of operations on my back. And they said, it's permanently damaged. You can't be a carpenter anymore. So then I was like, fuck. And the guy I was working for, he fired me, and I lost all my savings. And I was like, shit, I need to find something new to do. And I went to a meeting one night, and this doll that I knew, she goes, oh, my God, you should be a model. And I was like, huh? I was 30 at that point, and, you know, these are bite marks on my nose, and, you know,
it's personality.
This is a big tooth. Right? Like, I was like, I don't think I'm model material, but I was desperate, and I had no money. So I sent off some pictures and I got signed to like a shitty little modeling agency and I was doing that for a while. And there's like a modeling website called Model Mayhem and I had my shit on there and a director saw my picture and he had like he was doing a low budget gangster movie and he asked me to be in it. And they were looking for like a German hitman. And he goes, don't take this the wrong way, but you have that look about you. And I didn't want to scare him or anything. I was like, oh, really? Oh, okay. So I didn't really tell him I used to be one. Like, and then I did that one role, and I was like, fuck, I really like this. I'm going to try and be an actor now. And, I went to different schools, and I did, like, some smaller, low-budget shows. And then the shows got bigger, and then I moved to L.A., and here I am.
Peaky Blinders.
Is your... How's your family? What do they know about you and this?
Well, the family back home, they knew about it. Like, I put them through a lot, obviously. But they're happy I'm sober now and I'm not misbehaving anymore. And I have a couple of kids. Like, and my kids didn't know anything about it. Like, because when I got sober, my son was 5 and my girl was 3. So, like, they just know good daddy. So then I wrote the book and I got the book deal and I was like, fuck, I got to tell them about this before it comes out in the news. Like, so, you know, I started to tell them some stories, like, you know, about the kidnapping and drug trafficking and all this kind of stuff. And they're like, wow, Daddy, we had no idea you used to do this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but it's very bad. And I'm lucky I'm not in jail. And you guys should never, ever do anything like this.
How'd the kidnapping work?
Oh, so we didn't kill him.
All that.
So I was like 19 at the time when I was in this Irish gang back home. And I was always an addict from when I was young, you know. Mm-hmm. And what happens if you're an addict, you make a bad dealer because you're your own best customer. So leader of our gang was this guy called Tomo. And I owed Tomo a bit of money because he would keep giving me hundreds of ecstasy and I would end up taking most of them myself or giving them away or this kind of stuff. And there was another guy called Travis. Like, we were just teenagers, but he was like in his 30s. He was kind of a hippie guy. And Tomo sold him a few kilos of hash. And then Travis just like decided to keep the money, just stop answering the phone, you know. And then you see, Tomo had got his stuff on credit from a bigger dealer called Smiling Pat. And he's called Smiling Pat because if you're Irish, you know a lot of Pats, and he smiled a lot. Mm-hmm. So Pat's looking for his money because Tomo got the drugs on credit from him. And so he's like ringing him up and he's like putting power tools on the phone, like drills uh-huh. and saws, and say, you're going to get this if I don't get the money. So I owed money to Tomo and Travis owed money to Tomo. And so Tomo says, Mush, if you help me kidnap Travis, I'll write off your debt and his family will pay the fucking money. So I'm like, okay, but only if you don't kill him. He goes, Mush, I promise, swear to God, I won't kill him. So I'm like, okay. So then we had to kidnap this guy I had to spot him and follow him and basically let the boys know where he was. Like, and they came down from Dublin, and you see, Tomo had a different crew as well of ex-cons who were older than me. Like, but they used to like follow him around. He was like a 19-year-old kid, and all these older gangsters. He was smart, like, you know. So these other guys, they kidnapped Travis and brought him up to Dublin. And first, he was saying that his family had no money, and then Tomo just comes in with some trash bags. And he's like, Mush, you get the fucking money or you're going into the fucking bin bag. And then that kind of done it. And then he rang his family. His family drove up to Dublin, paid the money, and then plus interest and each of the kidnappers' fees and what I owed. And then the mother came up with the money. And
how was that conversation? Hey, Mom.
Well, in the end, Tomo went to get the money and, you know, he put a scarf, one of those Arab scarves around his head so they couldn't see his face. Mm-hmm. And they met her at a parking lot, and then she's like, please don't hurt Travis. And he's like, Mush, I don't know nothing about it. I'm just here to get the money. Mm-hmm. And then she gave the money, and then they let him go, and that was the end of it.
How much money were we talking about?
The kilos were probably about 6.5 grand, so probably about 8.5 grand altogether. That was pounds before we had the euro. Mm-hmm.
It is crazy. I was just talking to Mark Gargas about this. Somebody hired a hitman. A neighborhood. Someone in our neighborhood hired a hitman for something. It's exquisitely cheap. I mean, this was 20 grand.
Oh, and my God, it's exciting.
That's on the high end.
This should be the most expensive thing.
Ray Caruth, Panthers wideout. I mean, he got his baby mama killed for $4,000-$5,000 or something. I'm just going to tell my son, just travel around with $6,500. And if anyone tries to kidnap you and or kill you, like a hit, you just go, hold up.
Buy them out.
Fit $5,000? I got $6,500 right here. Let me just go to my car. Yeah, I mean, it's insultingly low.
Much like the Asian gang, what happens is reputation.
Yeah, I guess you're right. There is a reputation. I also like they had to pay the expenses of the kidnapper. Like there's a per diem.
The Ticketmaster fee.
For the kidnapper. Jesus Christ.
And then like when you get sober, so I got sober by going to 12-step meetings, right? And so step 9 is you got to make amends for all the bad things you had done.
Oh, yeah, I had that happen to me.
Yeah.
I mean, mine was Margaret Cho apologizing to me.
I know Margaret, she's sweetheart.
Yeah, but I really didn't want to. It was unnecessary.
Oh. You're forgiven.
Unnecessary, that's right.
Yeah, so anyway.
Kathy Griffin's party.
So step 8, you make a list of all the people you had harmed and become willing to make amends for them. And I got away with most of the stuff I had done, so I didn't want to go to jail. Like, so, you know, I'd write out the list, and Bernard told me, he says, before you make any amends, make sure you talk to me about them. because you can, bad things can happen. I was like, okay. So I wrote down the list.
That's your sponsor.
That's Bernard, my sponsor, or right. Bernard for Americans. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, well, sorry, keep going. Dawson, now you got to look for it.
In
the movie Billy Jack, Bernard and Bernard gets toggled back and forth. The bad guy is Bernard, but Billy Jack calls him Bernard.
Sure, depending who you ask.
Is that a British actor putting on American accent?
Tom Laughlin is the most American actor on the planet. I don't know, but I swear to God, you'll find a Bernard and a Bernard if you watch the movie Billy Jack.
Isn't
sorry.
Leno's guy Bernard? Isn't Leno's guy Bernard?
No, he's a Bernard.
Oh, okay.
Or at least that's right. He's just Bernard. Yeah, sorry.
So what happened?
So anyway, I was trying to decide what will be the amends for this. Like, how the fuck do you make amends for a kidnapping, you know? So I was like trying to think it out. And I was thinking, what's the opposite of a kidnapping? I could send him on a lovely vacation. I had money at that time. I was like, fuck it. That's what I'll probably do. And then I came to Bernard, like, and he says, well, what's the top of your list? I said, kidnap Travis. He goes, does that man know you had anything to do with the kidnapping? I said, no. He says, well, don't fucking say it to him. He says, it's probably the worst experience of the man's life. Just fucking leave him alone and don't fucking kidnap anyone again. Like, so you don't want to send him on a vacation. He says, no, just fucking leave him alone and don't kidnap anyone again.
Is this Bernard or Bernard? Is a sage?
Yeah,
oh,
he
a wise man.
Yeah, he was. I wouldn't be alive only for that fella today.
Well, and that's part of it, right? Like, you don't make amends to someone if it's only going to make you feel better, make their life worse.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, is Keckner here? I do not know. No. Oh, okay. All right. Did you find Bernard and Bernard?
I found two Bernards from Billy Jack.
From Billy Jack?
Yeah, I'm still looking for Bernard. I can't believe I found Bernard.
Well, I think Billy called him Bernard.
Yeah.
And then like the townsfolk or the kids would call him Bernard. I think he raped Billy's girlfriend by the river.
Right.
That's a Bernard move.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bernard, but I think that. She thought of him as a Bernard.
Oh.
He drove a Corvette. He fucked around with Indians.
Total Bernard.
What do you think was going to happen?
He was not of Irish descent, as far as I could tell. But I remember watching that 1972. Oh, here's the great Tom Laughlin.
Oh, come on, Bernard.
There he is. Bernard.
Wow.
But this is America, Billy.
Yeah.
And his name is Bernard.
Wish you would.
Don't, Bernard. You don't stand a chance.
Wow.
Maybe you just wanted him to be a Bernard.
I got
my head's spinning.
I saw this when I was 7. It's a very appropriate movie to watch when you're 7. But I don't know. Did his dad was the sheriff? Did he call him Bernard?
I can't find.
Watch all of Billy Jack right now.
Scrub through Billy Jack, and then while you're at it, I want to see the trial of Billy Jack. And Billy Jack goes to Washington.
Hey, Keckner's here.
Keckner's here.
Perfect.
Lucky son.
Well, Laughlin's an Irish last name. Maybe he was born to Irish parents.
Maybe Laughlin. Yeah, maybe that's where the Bernard.
We got to get to the bottom of this.
I remember very clearly, though, being like 8 years old going, I don't know what a fucking Bernard is.
What's
I know
Bernard?
What a Bernard is.
No, you know.
We got to get to the bottom of this. All right, Richie, a very interesting story. And I think hopefully we'll see it in episodic form on one of the streaming platforms, because Al Chuler and Krinsky, good guys. And it's an uplifting story is what I want to say. Yeah. The book, The Gangster's Guide to Sobriety, My Life in 12 Steps, is out as we speak. And Dave Keckner's going to join us in studio. We'll do that right after this.
Saddle up and get ready for Westerns Weeks on Pluto TV, all for free. We're coming in blazing with favorites like True Grit and Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Or immerse yourself in binge-worthy series like Yellowstone and Walker, Texas Ranger. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies, TV shows, and more. The best part? It's free. No credit card, no sign-up, no fees. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now.